Werner, the official ladder of the NCAA basketball championships and the official ladder of professional contractors who rise above the rest. Go to WernerLadder.com and see why professional contractors prefer Werner ladders more than any other brand.
Donovan McNabb traded to the Washington Redskins, and here's our buddy Shefty, our NFL insider extraordinaire, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. All right, Adam, take us through this. How did this trade happen?
Well, what happened was Washington and Philly had been talking ever since January. Now, it was a situation where they've been talking since January on a total basic level, like unrealistic, nothing's going to happen. And neither side ever thought that Donovan McNabb would wind up in Washington. It was the type of situation where Washington is doing its due diligence, researching whether McNabb ever would be available. The Eagles don't ever expect to trade him to Washington. And as time goes on, and as potential destinations continue to go by the wayside, and as it develops that way, it's obvious that really the only places that Donovan McNabb could wind up going, there might have been one other exception, but Sal Palantonio last night said Denver, which that was the first time I had heard that. You'll have to ask Sal about that later. But really the two main options were Oakland and Buffalo. And Donovan McNabb's representative, Fletcher Smith, made it very clear that he preferred not to go to Oakland or Buffalo, and that of the teams that they've been talking to, Washington would be the one that he would be willing to go to and the one that he would want to go to. When that happened, the two sides stepped up talks, and on Saturday, the Redskins came up and offered a second-round pick. And when the two sides could not agree to anything on Saturday night, they continued talking Sunday, and eventually, with Andy Reid talking to Bruce Allen, the Redskins agreed to send a 2011 third or fourth round pick to Philadelphia. And when that pick was thrown in last night at about 8 Eastern, the trade was agreed to, and an hour and a half later, on Easter night, we have Andy Reid meeting the press in Philadelphia. And it's a dramatic trade because there are so many ripple effects, and it is so huge and impacts so many people and so many teams and so many franchises. But basically, the Redskins start over at quarterback with Donovan McNabb, with Mike Shanahan as his head coach, whereas last year it was Jim Zorn and Jason Campbell. The Philadelphia Eagles hand off their franchise to Kevin Cobb, who is the quarterback that they believed in all along. How many times do we talk about that, Mike Golic?
Oh.
And now you have the Rams with one less trade partner at the top of the draft. You have to wonder where Jimmy Clausen is going to fall. And football is as upside down as it is when Brett Favre goes to play for the Minnesota Vikings.
So as far as McNabb and other, you talked about other possible trade partners. When Washington comes up with the pick for next year, does Philly go to Oakland? Do they go to Buffalo? Did they try and see if they could get as good a deal? Was there as good a deal for Donovan McNabb in other places than in Washington? And if so, would they have gone to another direction if it was a better deal?
That ultimately, in the end, was what Philadelphia struggled with. Not getting what they wanted in return from those teams, but having it be those teams. They felt like for all that Donovan had done for that franchise, for all the success that he helped bring Andy Reid and Joe Banner and the rest of the people there, for somebody that didn't want to go finish his career in another place, that it wasn't fair to send him there. And out of a sign of respect to Donovan, out of a sign of fairness, when he was open and willing and enthused about going to Washington, they felt that it was right to do that to him. And let's also be honest. You say, well, how can you do that in your division? Well, they're shopping Donovan McNabb because they believe in Kevin Cobb. And if you believe in Kevin Cobb and you've made your decision to go with Kevin Cobb, then you turn it over and you say, you know what? We're going to respect this man and we're not going to send him to football Siberia and we're going to let him go play, even if it means we now have to play him twice a year and compete for a division title with him.
Mike and Mike, Adam Schefter, who broke the story yesterday, McNabb traded to the Redskins. How about his contract situation? He has 1 year left on the deal. Do you expect him to sign an extension in Washington?
Well, you would think that he would in time. I think that would happen. But I can tell you this, that there have been no contract discussions at this time. I think that nobody on the Redskins side or the McNabb side thought that Washington would go through it. It was so quick and so sudden when it happened that there was not time to talk about a contract. And correct if I'm wrong, but I don't think that money's ever stopped Dan Snyder.
Terrific job. Adam Schefter breaking the story last night. Thank you, Schefter, for the very latest. We'll check in with you later.
Have a great day, guys.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
The man who made the deal that has the whole sports world talking, Donovan McNabb, traded from the Eagles to the Redskins, and joining us now is the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Andy Reid. Coach, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time on what is obviously a very busy time in Philadelphia. Let's start with the question everyone has. Why did you trade Donovan McNabb?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was sitting there with three quarterbacks in the last year of their contract, and so I sat back and listened to the different offers that came in, and I felt that this was the best offer and the best situation for the Philadelphia Eagles and for Donovan.
You know, obviously there are other people there in management positions as well who chime in on some things. So for you, did you want to trade Donovan McNabb?
Well, listen, I have the final say on the whole thing there, Mike. So I yes, I mean that's you know how this business goes. There's a business side, and then there's a personal side, and so I knew I was going to be in this situation. I didn't know that it would be Donovan that would end up being traded, but I knew I was going to be offered something and had to do something. And so it ended up being Donovan and with a pretty good deal for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's also a good deal for Washington, and it's a good deal for Donovan. It's a good situation for him.
Second-round draft pick is what you get from the Redskins, plus a conditional pick, either a third or a fourth the following year. I think there had been a perception out there, Andy, as those of us have been covering it, that you were getting a lot of offers for Kevin Cobb and that you weren't willing to trade him. What kind of trade conversations did you have involving Cobb? I guess what I'm saying is there was a perception that you chose to keep Cobb over Donovan, even though there were equal or maybe even better offers out there for Cobb.
Well, I can't deny that there wasn't a choice to be made because I was offered things for Kevin. I thought this was the best deal here with the Donovan deal. So I did not go into it saying that Donovan was the guy. I kept it open for all three of them. This happened to be what I considered the best deal for everybody.
Talking with Andy Reid, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, and the heels of Donovan McNabb getting traded to the Washington Redskins. And let's now, Donovan to Washington, a team you play twice a year. So the question is, why Washington, if in fact there were other offers out there that were in the area of what Washington offered?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you what. I didn't concentrate as much on Washington as I did on the Philadelphia Eagles. And so I've got to do what I think is best for our football team. And so when you get into a negotiation, that's the way you think. Do you take into consideration a bit that it's a Washington? Well, okay, you might think about it a little bit. But number one, you're thinking about your football team and what you need to do to become even a better football team. And that's part of this business. I've heard you say that several times. This is part of the game. And so... We're trying to make ourselves better. We felt this was the best way to do it, and we pulled the trigger there.
So this was the best deal that you had offered for Donovan?
Yeah, this was the best deal for, I think, all parties involved, yeah.
Mike, Andy Reid is with us. What conversation, if any, have you had with him since the deal was made?
Well, I had a nice talk with him after the deal was made. Listen, we are friends and will remain friends, and we had 11 great years together. Unfortunately, this game moves fast, and especially in this day and age, things happen like this. It's a terrible, terrible thing to deal with as a player and as a coach when there's a certain bond that you develop out on that football field, and it's tight and emotional and everything else. It's just a neat thing. It doesn't last forever. That's the problem. And so we all face it. We all know it's coming sometime, someplace. And The players are conditioned to it the best they can be. The coaches are, and then you kind of move on, and the game moves on.
And Coach, you're right. I do talk a lot about the business aspect of it, and I think the quicker everybody understands that, the better off they're going to be. But that doesn't take away the fact that you have personal relationships with players, players with players, coaches with players. So just was it, how emotional was it, or how difficult was it when you were talking to him and knowing that this, at least this business side of this relationship was over?
Well, it obviously was tough. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. It's when you've been together for 11 years, you develop this bond, and that's how it is. So is it an emotional thing? Yeah, that's an emotional thing. And so, but at the same time, you move on, and I know he'll have success. Hopefully not for two games during the year, but I know he's going to have success, and I know we're going to have success. So it'll work out. I believe fine. I'm not good at predicting the future, but I think it'll work out fine. And life moves on. So that's how we kind of, both of us kind of looked at it, I think.
Mike and Mike, Andy Reid, coach of the Eagles, with us on Mike and Mike in the Morning. And so now the future for the Eagles is placed in the hands of Kevin Cobb. What would you say to Eagle fans today are realistic expectations for him in his first year as your starter coming up?
Well, first of all, I thought I was getting on to talk about the Final Four, Tiger Woods, and the opening day of baseball season. Here I'm talking about Donovan McNabb and Kevin Cobb.
Well, you could have done all of those things if you hadn't traded McNabb yesterday. We would love to have had you on today.
That's okay. I don't mind. Listen, I don't mind talking shop here. That's okay. So, Kevin Cobb, Kevin, obviously we have confidence in Kevin to be able to do what we did here. We've also got confidence in Michael Vick. We've still got a tremendous situation at that position. So, Kevin, the things that we've seen in Kevin is leadership, and he's a smart kid. He's a, not that it matters, but he's a coach's kid. He grew up around the sport, and he's got a nice control of the offense. He's got a good enough arm strength, and he's a good enough athlete to make this thing work. And so, and then he was able to be tutored under Donovan. So he got to see how it's done and done right, and that I think has helped his maturation process move forward here.
And he's young, and, you know, Sal Palantonio was on this morning and pointed out how young your football team is. A lot of changes made since the regular season ended. You're becoming one of the youngest teams in the NFL. So, you know, the word rebuilding is one no one wants to use. What would you say are realistic expectations for the Eagles going forward right now?
Well, this is a little bit like the movie Cocoon. I'm hoping some of it rubs off on me. I'm getting older, and everybody else is getting younger. Listen, I think we'll be fine. We've got some work ahead of us. We understand that. The majority of the football team's up here and grinding and doing the off-season program, and we've got some moves that we've got to make here. In the draft, with 11 picks, we've got a little flexibility there, and we'll try to bring in even some more good players to this football team, and we should have a chance to compete.
All right, now to the I think the toughest question this morning: can Butler take out Duke tonight?
You know what? That Butler thing—that is a neat deal. I mean, that is fun to watch. When I was at with the Green Bay Packers, Green Bay there, University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, played Butler. They were in the same conference. And so I had a chance to – Butler's always been good. I mean, they've always had a good program. And so I've had a chance to watch them, and I started following them. And over the years, just watched that program grow and grow and grow. But I think they stand a chance. I honestly think they stand a chance. I know Duke is powerful. They've got those big guys in the middle. They're powerful. But it should be a heck of a game.
All right, listen, stop trading quarterbacks. We'll have you on Breakdown Basketball
exactly right.
Anytime you want. Thank you so much, Coach.
I'm ready, man. Dickie V better watch out.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Coach.
See
you. Best of luck.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
part of what everyone's talking about clearly will be Duke and Butler tonight in Indianapolis. And let's go to Indy and bring in our buddy Jay Billis on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good morning, Jay. And I'll begin it by asking you, as I did on Friday, now, what is the buzz like in town there in Indy with the little engine that could Butler about to play for the national championship?
Well, as loud as the hum was over Butler being in the Final Four on Friday, it's magnified times five. I think people are even more excited, and there are folks walking around. I walked by a guy the other day working in Lucas Oil Stadium, and he said Butler's going to win. And I said, you think so, huh? And he says, I know so. And, so they're really excited about it.
You know, and everybody is looking at the magical run they're having. And they're an excellent basketball team, and the little engine that could thing and that whole deal. Well, it's going to take more than that. So obviously, let's go on the court. They're a 7.5-point underdog to Duke. Duke seems to be the better team at this point. So what does Butler have to do on the court to win this game?
Well, I think they have to shoot it a lot better than they have. For the NCAA tournament, the five games they've played, they're shooting under 40% for the tournament, and that's not going to be good enough. I mean, if you had told me going in that Butler would shoot 30% against Michigan State and win, I would have said there's no way they can do that. But what they did against Michigan State was they kept it to a low possession game, and that's what they've got to do against Duke. They cannot afford to get it up and down. Duke's not forcing a ton of turnovers, so I don't think that the turnovers should be that big of a deal, but Butler certainly can't afford to turn it over, and I think they really have to rebound. I think Duke's offensive rebounding is the biggest reason that they're at the Final Four and the biggest reason that they're in position to become national champions. And one of the things that you can't do, I think guard rebounding is really important, and not just grabbing rebounds, but making sure that you make contact with your assignment and then stick with them, because it was at least three times. I know it was three for sure against West Virginia. Duke got an offensive rebound and kicked it out to a guy shooting a three. And that has become a really big weapon for this team, and it's like a punch in the gut when you're playing, because, you know, when a shot goes up and you're defending, you're not thinking about playing more defense. You know, you're thinking about taking it the other way. And when a team gets an offensive rebound, you know, maybe a stick back, okay, you know, you've seen that before, but when you're kicking it out for a three, you know, you're kicking it out to a guy who's stepping into that shot and he's wide open. It's the best time to shoot a three in basketball, in my judgment.
Mike and Jay Billis. Golic made that observation earlier. And so at the risk of asking a ridiculous question, sort of from a coaching standpoint, is there anything you can do about that aside from the obvious, which is
get the rebound
in the first place? But when Duke does get the offensive rebound, because you would think the defensive team is crashing the boards trying to get that rebound, from a coaching standpoint, how do you combat that fact that they're kicking it out and knocking down these wide open threes?
You tell your guards they have to be alert to their assignment. Most guards don't box out, because a lot of offensive guards just stay on the perimeter, just hang out looking for long rebounds. So you're not, most guards don't box. And you have to work with your guys. We need to box out, and not only do we need to make first contact and keep the contact, but you've got to stick with your guy. And because a lot of guards get caught in no man's land, they're kind of leaking out, but they're not really boxing anybody out. And I think that's why all five guys being involved in every defensive rebounding possession for Butler is going to be really important.
Mike and Mike, Jay Billis is with us. This is Coach Mike Krzyzewski's 11th trip to the Final Four. When he made his first trip to the Final Four, his center was Jay Billis. And Jay, I know you've said many times on this show, you've said it to me, one of the things you are proudest of in your life is that you made the decision to go with Coach K before he was what he is now. So with that thought in mind, there's this story on NorthJersey.com that the incoming billionaire owner of the Nets, the Russian billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov, is prepared to offer Coach K between $12 and $15 million a year to come be the coach and the general manager of the Nets. He's had a million offers from the NBA before, most notably the Lakers a few years ago, and always turned it down. What do you expect to happen here?
I don't know. That's the first I've heard of that. I'd heard that the Nets were going to show interest in him and all that stuff, I hadn't heard the $12 to $15 million number. That's a big pile of money. I don't know what he'd do. I don't expect him to take it. I think that, you know, he has enjoyed his time with the Olympic team and I think will again, over the next three summers. And that's kind of given him his NBA fix, so to speak. So I don't think he would leave for any normal NBA job, but that's a life-changing amount of money. So you never know. I don't put it beyond anybody to, you know, to take an offer that no reasonable person would turn down. But I wouldn't expect him to take it, but it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me to see anybody say, yeah, 12 to 15 million, I'll take that.
That is, as you mentioned, a nice
pile of money.
Big pile of money. So how do you see the game tonight? Who do you think wins?
I think Duke's the better team, and I think Duke will win. I mean, I just hope Matt Howard plays for a variety of reasons. But just you want to see the best Butler team. You want to see the both teams at full strength. And I think Butler, one of the things I think where Butler has a chance is, you know, they've not shot it particularly well. I can't imagine that's going to continue to go on, that they're going to keep shooting it that poorly. And we talked about West Virginia not being a very good shooting team. West Virginia shot 50% in the first half against Duke. Duke just shot the lights out. And if Butler can guard better than West Virginia did, and I don't think West Virginia played their best game defensively, I think that they have a chance. If they can stay in it through the first half and stay close, I think Butler has a chance in this game. I think Duke's going to win, but I think Butler has a reasonable chance.
Enjoy tonight, Jay. Thanks as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
College basketball national championship game tonight is Dick Vitale in his usual spot live from Indianapolis on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good morning, Dickie V.
Well, good morning, guys. Certainly a magical moment here. There's a real buzz. I mean, I went to church yesterday for Easter, and as I'm coming back after communion to show you the buzz and the spirit over Butler, I mean, a guy gets up and he says to me, hey, Dickie V, we're going to shock America tomorrow and all those people that love Duke.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of Duke, before we break down the game, look back at Saturday's games, and get into one of the really awful moments that we've seen in a long time in basketball. What a horrible shame what happened to Deshaun Butler on Saturday night. But I'm not sure if you heard us mention this story just moments ago. NorthJersey.com reporting that the new billionaire Russian owner of the New Jersey Nets is preparing to make Mike Krzyzewski an offer that may be very difficult to refuse, talking somewhere from $12 to $15 million a year to come be coach and general manager of the Nets. If Coach K wins tonight, he'll have won four titles, 30 years. He'll have accomplished basically everything that can be accomplished on the college level. What do you make of this, Dickie V?
Well, you know, I don't think he goes. I think it's very, very flattering, very thrilling, but I just know Mike. I know his values. I know he's making good money. He's not starving down at Duke. And, I mean, he just absolutely loves where he's living. He loves the family relationships. His family's there. And I just can't see dollars changing that feeling. You know, you don't mess with happiness, my friend. And it'd be different if the guy was making like $100,000 a year. He's making millions as it is right now. How much more is that going to affect your life? He's a college coach. He is going to go down when he wins the national title today. And I say when he wins it because I will be shocked beyond belief if Butler has enough offense to be able to offset Duke. And I really believe he will go down, guys. I really think as one of the great, great leaders of all time, not only basketball, I'm talking about when you talk about leaders and coaches who really are at the head of the list and go to the top of the mountain, he is going to be there. He does a magnificent job. This is not one of the most talented Duke teams that he's ever had. I mean, the 86 team, the 91, 92, you even think 99 when they lost, and then 2002 when they won. But I'm going to tell you, my friends, he told me a long time ago, he said, this team is the closest of any team I've ever coached, playing to its potential, And that's because of his leadership skills.
Yeah, you know, I heard him say that too. I heard him talk about this team. He said it's a really good team that's actually playing great now and playing better as the season goes on, and played an excellent game against West Virginia. So let's talk about the game then. Duke, or Butler, I should say, is having a magical run, playing some incredible defense. Nobody thinks they're 7.5-point underdog to Duke in this game. A lot of people don't think they can beat Duke. So what does Butler have to do to win this game?
Well, you know, Mike, I think number one, obviously you got to shut down the perimeter shooting, and they've done a phenomenal job when you look at Butler, as you said so well. They've not allowed a team to score 60 points. I mean, think about it. We're talking Syracuse. We're talking about Kansas State. We're talking about Michigan State. Have not been able to get to the 60 mark, and anytime you can do that, you got a chance to win. Saying all that, Duke averages 77 points a game during the year. They have really been on fire, and the reason they're a different team, it all started when they inserted Zubek into the starting lineup and he started to contribute to give them great balance. They do a phenomenal job off the offensive glass, kicking the ball back out to open shooters who step right in and knock down those threes, whether it be a Singler, whether it be a Shire, whether it be Nolan Smith. Those three, if all three are playing well, you have no chance. Now, they've been able to survive. Shire goes 1 for 11 against California. They survive. Singler goes 0 for 10 against Baylor. They survive. They're inside people, Thomas, the Plumleys, and certainly Zubek. They know their roles, and they handle those roles so effectively. But this team is playing great defense as well. But you look at Butler, shut down the threes, number one. Number two, shorten the game. Got to reduce the possessions of the game. They got to be able to control the complete tempo of that game, get the early lead, get Duke a little bit of sleep. The crowd is going to be obviously David versus Goliath. But, you know, when you think about it, we were talking last night, a bunch of us media people, and, you know, you talk about the magnitude of the win, and it's only because of the name. Preseason, they're number 10 in America. Villanova, when they beat Georgetown, they weren't preseason top 10. Jimmy Valvano, he luckily got in the NCAA tournament, had to win the ACC to get in. Those were a little different, but it's because of the name of the school, financial. I mean, think about the coach. I mean, he's 33 years of age. He was about 14, maybe, when Mike Krzyzewski cut the Nets down for the first time here in Indianapolis. I get a kick. When he goes over for the pregame handshake, he may say, "Hey, Coach K, can I have your autograph? Can I get a picture with you?"
He is so youthful looking as well, Brad Stevens, the coach of Butler, but cool as a cucumber. You watch the last seconds of that game in the national championship. If you just watch his face when they cut away and showed that, you would never know what had happened. He is extraordinarily calm, which is, it's remarkable. He's done a terrific job. Mike and Mike and Dick Vitale is with us. I agree with you. It's the name on the front of the jersey that would make it the bigger surprise. And yet, as a guy who coached at the University of Detroit, Dick Vitale, as a guy who lives to stand up for the little guy, what would it mean for the sport if Butler won the title?
Absolutely. I mean, you talk about the real basketball fans. They understand how good this club has been all year, but you get my wife and you get your grandmother, your grandfather who just comes along during tournament time. They hear the name Butler. It's like Shock City. So you're looking at a school who's, I'll guarantee you, Duke's phone budget is probably bigger than their whole recruiting budget. And you look at the salary structure, you look at the entire role there. I mean, come on now. Let's be real. You see the name Butler, it like doesn't belong. But that's what shocks everybody. It would mean so much, I'll tell you, Mike, to every little school. I know if I was coaching Detroit now, member the Horizon Conferences, where they're from. When you go to practice for the first time October 15th, you load up your bulletin board with all the stories about Butler, and now you chase that dream. Hey, guys, the magic of it all is this could never happen in football because of the numbers involved, the number of players needed to be a success. In basketball, if you get a couple of kids who maybe are late developers, like the kid Haywood, like a Shelvin Mack, who wants to go to Kentucky, but Kentucky says, no, we are going in another direction. A kid like Haywood, who maybe Purdue shows a little interest, late, but he says, you know what? They wanted me from day one at Butler. And these kids become players and then surround them with good complementary players like the kid Norrin and Feasley. But I'll tell you this, if they play without Matt Howard tonight and this talk that he can't play, we may have a blowout.
He suffered a concussion. He's one of the most important players on that team, and we'll keep an eye on it. There's Dickie V live in Indianapolis getting set for tonight's national championship game.